seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, I know everyone is now very excited about spring planting because yesterday was beautiful, even though the wind was still kind of blowing through the trees. People were very excited outside, a lot of projects getting underway. I've seen the landscapers back at it. Feels like spring.
It does. The wind has made it seem colder than it's been, but I've noticed lawns are greening up. I saw daffodils out in front of the station in bloom.
Well, I have some at my house. Mm-hmm.
So they're a little earlier than usual this year, but things are really starting to wake up. Even in the orchards, I spent a day in the orchards last week, and the fruit trees are pushing right along. The apricots will be in bloom, I suspect, within a couple of weeks. And so things are moving.
Right. Last few weeks, we've been talking about spring blooming plants. This morning, we wanted to focus on the summer blooming bulbs, because if you want some summer blooming bulbs, it's about that time that you're going to want to plant those.
It is. Start watching for things, because the time to plant is going to be closer to late April into May, when we start to have a chance of frost diminishing for most of these things. But a lot of them you can order now. Some of them are becoming more available in stores.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the summer blooming bulbs. We are talking about the dahlias, the gladiolas, the Asiatic lilies, those kinds of things.
Yes, there are many of them out there, and they get lumped into the bulb group, though that's kind of nebulous. A lot of them are not actually bulbs, which I guess I'm more concerned about that than some,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we plant. But there are many of these that if we lived,
like tubers,
yeah, tubers and all sorts of different things. If we lived in a slightly warmer climate, they would overwinter on their own. Dahlias, if we were 10 to 15 degrees warmer in the winter, would be just fine outside. They would come back and do their thing. But we have to dig them. Some of these we don't need to. And so it just really depends on the species. But
most of them you do need to take out.
Most of them you do need to take out.
And that's where the complication arises for me. I used to plant tons of dahlias, take them out for the winter, overwinter them, and put them back. But that takes a great deal of work.
It does. Some people
commitment.
I see that do such things, the kind of a compromise is to get a bag of steer manure and put a pile 6 inches high over every dahlia after it's frozen back for the fall, and then cover that steer manure with some bark mulch. And what will happen over the winter is that steer manure breaks down. It heats the soil up a little bit. And if we don't get too cold, the dahlias will overwinter in the soil that way. And so there are some things you can try. You can try that.
I'm never trying
the
that.
The cannas are another one that sometimes overwinter if they're against a building. But you can cover those with 4 or 5 inches of bark mulch and then rake it off in late March. And they will oftentimes overwinter. So several of these things will overwinter if we don't get too cold. But a few, you know, the Asiatic lilies, the Oriental lilies are perfectly cold hardy. But we just usually plant them in the spring.
Okay. What other interesting bulbs are there out there that we don't often think about for summer bulbs?
Well,
I mentioned the general ones.
Elephant ears are one that we would consider in this group. And those are a great big foliage plant to get 3 or 4 feet tall. Some other ones, gladiolas, and I think people do plant those, but they're not super common.
They think about them as being the cemetery plant.
Yes, and so in the industry, they're
it's
oftentimes
gotten a
just
bad
called
reputation.
Glads, but there are so many neat,
they're so beautiful though,
gladiola
right.
varieties and species. And I actually could get them to overwinter in protected areas up in Cache Valley, so I think they're hardier than people will give credit. But some others, caladium is another one, and they have a oftentimes variegated foliage with pink in them, and they do well in kind of semi-shaded areas. But irises are really common. Hardy cyclamen is another one. They look similar to the cyclamens you can buy, but you plant them and then they'll leaf out and then go dormant, and then they flower in the fall and then go dormant again. So the hardy cyclamens, crocosmia is another one. Sometimes it's called sulfur lily, but crocosmia has these brilliant red or yellow flowers that come out in kind of a spray that are really pretty. And so there's a number of them out there. I mean, if you wanted to get online, websites like Brex, the bulb company, has a number of options, and some of them are less common, but there are all sorts of places online to order, but local garden centers and box stores will have a huge selection too.
What else do we need to think about when we're planting summer bulbs?
Just make sure that the soil's loose, but not too, you know, too loose. Most of these bulbs are native to areas where there's more organic matter in the soil, so it may not hurt to mix in some compost around them. Some of them may benefit from just a little bit of fertilizer, but most of them do fairly well.
I've had gladiolas actually come back in my courtyard because it's a total different climate in there. But then after a few years, they kind of died off. What is the length or what is the lifetime of bulbs, summer bulbs?
It just really depends on the species. You know, the lilies will last for years and they naturalize a little bit. And so if you plant one 10 years down the road, you might have five or six of them growing, and they just kind of spread out and they'll form pups. But others, like you mentioned, the gladiolas and even the dahlias, if they're not brought in and they do overwinter, you probably don't want to expect more than 3 or 4 years out of them. The iris are really long-lived. Hardy cyclamens, probably 3 or 4 or 5 years and they're done. One thing I found interesting is they put daylilies into this group in a lot of websites. And we usually plant them from pots, but you can find the starts for daylilies. And the Latin name, Hemerocallis, in Latin means beautiful for a day.
Right.
And so the Latin name matches the English common name on it. But I just thought that somebody would take the time to name them that in Latin.
That is funny. The funny thing about them is they only last for a day, the flower, but if you have a bunch of them, they don't bloom on the same day. So
no.
They last more than a day.
They do. So once the plants are established, they will bloom usually for anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. If we have temperatures that are cooler in the late spring and summer, Stella de Oro, if temperatures are consistently below 85, will bloom. And so we get about 6 weeks out of Stella daylily and sometimes some fall blooms. But I've noticed in warmer climates like San Diego and Los Angeles, those Stella daylilies will bloom a lot of the winter, you know, especially spring and fall. And so it's interesting to see some of these outside of Utah in other climates. But daylilies, there's hundreds of varieties and species available. You know, so there are a lot of options mm-hmm. out there.
I needed to transplant a bunch of them last year, so I'm waiting to see how they do.
I bet you
spring.
They do fine.
Okay, well, we'll find out. I'll report on that as they start to come up. Anything else about the summer bulbs?
Just be aware they are out there and that there are options. You know, even tuberous begonias, a lot of people don't like begonias, and it seems like people are either successful or they're not. But you can plant those. There's also the fibrous begonias you can look at that do well in shade. And so maybe if you space them correctly, you would put them in with elephant ear and caladiums in those areas. But there's just a lot of different options.
All right. And we're getting excited about planting. You can find out more about the summer blooming bulbs on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to come back with your calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open right now. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to our first text question of the morning. And this person would like to know, what vegetable seeds should they be direct seeding now?
They can already. Must I forgot turn on to your turn mic. On the microphone. Mm-hmm. So spinach, radishes, peas, onions, cabbage, broccoli.
Can go directly outside right now.
Yes, especially peas can go in about any time. In a week or so, they can start in with beets and cauliflower, lettuce around late March. You know, there's a lot of things they can do. Swiss chard's another one.
How late in the season can you plant peas? Because I do this wrong every
probably
year.
Not past the first or second week of April. The second week of April, you're really pushing it and you may not get a crop.
Okay. That's something I need to worry about.
Yes.
And I've got my trellises aren't going to be here for another week or so. I was mentioning to you off air, I have to grow vertically since I've eliminated a large amount of space in my vegetable garden.
You are living in a construction project right now.
It's really not fun. That's all I'm going to say about that. Next person would like to know, what's causing the bark to disappear off of some of their peach tree branches? What would cause that?
Probably southwest winter injury from winter sun. The sap flows during the day when the bark heats when the sun heats the bark up, and then the sap freezes at night and bursts the cells in the conductive tissue, and the bark under, you know, that's over the top, because the conductive tissue is dead, sloughs off and you just see bare wood.
Okay. Will it grow back, or what happens
if
with that?
It is remedied. So what we recommend doing is on the south and west sides of the trees, the trunk and major limbs, paint them with water-based latex paint that's white. Mm-hmm. And you do this in the fall, and that will protect those areas, and the bark just kind of grows around it. The paint eventually sloughs off, but that would be the solution for that. Or you can get tree wrap, which is a white gauze tape with no sticky on it, and you wrap the trunk and lower limbs with it, and you can just take it off and reuse it.
Okay. Next person would like to know, is it too early to turn on their sprinkler system for the spring?
It is. Just leave that sprinkler system off. Now, the exception would be if you are putting in cool season crops and you need to irrigate, you could activate a portion for that. But we generally don't need to start irrigating our lawns until anywhere from late April through May. And there's a law that I think it may have been passed that's actually the fall. You can't water your lawn after October 1st, but a lot of irrigation companies and cities are looking at maybe not even letting people water their lawns until mid to late May to June 1st.
Okay. But they can start preparing their sprinklers
for
the season.
They can. It's still, if I'm assuming they're on culinary. And the things I would be cautious of is if we get cold, you know, down into the teens and there's water in the sprinkler heads, those sprinkler heads may freeze. And so I would be a little cautious, but if the weather dictates, they may be able to test to make sure everything's still functioning.
The next listener would like you to give them some good ideas for replacing perennial salvia.
Oh boy, there are other perennial salvias out there. May Night, which is a dark purple salvia, used to be our go-to. And it's an older variety that has a tendency, it only blooms for 2 or 3 weeks and it kind of flops over. Even if you deadhead it, the new blooms that come back are not that spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But there, I would look at some of the newer salvias. I would jump on Perennial Favorites website and take a look at what they have, because there would be some options there. Man, if they're wanting something that's going to be a little later blooming, but they could do the hummingbird mints. They're related to salvia. They attract pollinators in. Hummingbird mint will bloom from July through October, especially the southwestern varieties. They have kind of an anisey, licorice-y scent to the leaves that mm-hmm. in some parts of the country and in like Korea, they use hummingbird mint as an herb in salads and teas and things. So it's a really neat one just because it will attract the pollinators in, but they are very beautiful and they bloom the last half of the summer.
Is there a salvia that blooms most of the summer rather than just once or twice?
Some of them will, but they are not completely hardy. Salvia greggii, and I don't know what the common name on that is, but Salvia greggii will bloom the entire summer. And it sometimes overwinters here, but it's one that if we were 10 degrees warmer, so Moab, St. George, it would easily overwinter. Some of our native salvias, I'm trying to remember the names of them, but we have one or two native salvias that have pink flowers that bloom a lot of the summer.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, they'd like to fertilize their 5-year-old ivory silk lilac trees. And what would you recommend would be the best way to fertilize those?
I would just get some lawn fertilizer as long as it's not weed and feed. And if they're 5 years old, I would probably use a half of a cup, maybe 3/4, and just spread it under the canopy of the trees in mid to late March. And that's all they really need to do.
Okay. Next sister wants to know, should they prune fruit trees that were just planted last year?
Yes, they should. Get on some pruning videos USU's put together on YouTube. Look up the fact sheets on pruning new trees, but it is critical to prune those the first few years because you're developing the canopy for the tree for the rest of its life. And one of the biggest mistakes we make is not pruning. And then down the road, because of the fruit load, the branches collapse and snap because we didn't do proper training up front.
Okay. Next listener says that they've heard of a ground cover called Manzanita. How well will that do here?
Some varieties do so well. Bearberry is one of them, Arctostaphylos uva ursi, and it's a really low mat forming one, but there are some hybrid manzanitas that, if they can find them, are wonderful, that get taller, about 18 inches tall. But so there's 3 or 4 manzanitas that do well. The easiest to find is called Bearberry.
Okay. I'm not sure I know what the manzanita look like.
They look a little like a prostrate cotoneaster or maybe just a little bit like Vinca minor, the lesser periwinkle. We'll look up some pictures on break.
I will. Okay. So the next listener would like to know when they should put iron on silver maple trees that have iron chlorosis.
Anytime. I would head to the farm store or garden center to pick up the EDDH iron. The most common brand is Miller's Fera Plus. There's also Grow More chelated iron, and get that mixed up and put it on now. I would also put on a light application of nitrogen fertilizer and maybe even some liquid humates or granular humates to do everything you can to maximize uptake of that iron.
Okay, so they were wondering what was the best way to apply those. But
mixed up in a 5-gallon bucket. We used to recommend drilling holes in the soil, and our urban forester, who recently retired, has talking in conversation with him, said you may as well just mix it up and then apply it with a 5-gallon bucket, just drenching in a kind of a snake pattern back and forth under the canopy of the tree, and then get your hose out and then just water it in for 10 or 15 minutes so that it gets into the soil, or time it with a rainstorm.
Okay. We're going to come back with your calls and questions. The phone lines are open now. You might want to call before it gets too busy. 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open now, and you can text us your questions at 57500. Ton, our next listener would like to know, when's the best time to put the first application of fertilizer on a pasture?
Pastures. Now, I'm going to default to my brethren and sister, and I guess, in the ag world.
Okay.
But for turf in your lawn, it would be mid-April to early May,
mm-hmm.
as late as Mother's Day. But I would say, just with general turf knowledge, I would wait until May to do that. And then the other critical time is going to be in the fall, just so that you can get that grass going faster in the spring. And so if you put another application, even a light one, down sometime in mid to late October, the grass will green up a week or two ahead of what it would.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, is there any way to shade a hydrangea in the month of July and August so that they don't get the blooms burned?
You can try putting a shade structure over them where you would get some posts and stretch some shade cloth, but I don't know of anything super elegant unless you wanted to build like a pergola or build something that you could kind of get them the shade, but then you would run some clematis or some wisteria or something up so that it just naturally provided some shade there. It's really tough to modify the environment for the plant as compared to just planting something where it's more adapted for the environment. So the hydrangea would be planted somewhere where there's afternoon shade.
Next person would like to know, is it too soon to aerate their lawn?
Not really. It's not a great time, but there's companies out there with hundreds of companies that with man, words are really hard this morning, but there's companies out there with hundreds of customers that they just need to get it done. And so I would prefer to wait another 2 or 3 weeks, but if there's a company offering and that's when they can do it, it's not going to kill the lawn.
Well, and then this next week is supposed to be very lovely.
It is. And so
week.
Without several days of rain, the soil will dry out a bit. And so it will, the soil will be at the right moisture level to pull those plugs out so that you don't actually do more damage to the soil by compacting it.
How would they decide? I mean, everybody's yard's different depending on which way the lawn is facing, west or whatever. How would they decide if the soil is okay right now?
Well, if they can go to an area where they have open soil, like a flower bed or a vegetable garden, just get a shovel and stick it into the soil and all the way to the top of the blade so that it's all the way in the soil, and just lift it up and then turn the soil. And if the soil sticks and is gummy and it sticks to the metal on the shovel, it's too wet. But if you can go out and dig, and it's still kind of easy to get the shovel in, but for the most part, the soil doesn't stick to the shovel, then mm-hmm. that's the right soil texture, consistency of moisture that you want.
Okay, next listener is John in Tremonton. He says he likes the open vase pruning in peach trees. He planted a semi-dwarf Chinese apricot last year, and could it be pruned using the open vase technique?
It can, and what I would recommend with apricots is they get big and don't cut all the wood off lower down.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to work around it, but the biggest mistake we make with peaches and apricots is we like to clean all the middle wood out that is, and then leave the foliage on the tips. And what will happen over 10 or 15 years, you have to have a ladder to be able to pick the fruit, and it just becomes a hazard, hard to pick. And the apricot will eventually get that big, but watch some pruning videos. But leave fruiting wood lower down. There is no reason to clean it all off until the end third of the branch. The other thing you're doing when you do that is that the fruit, if you can imagine holding a 10-pound weight in your hand with your arm extended horizontally, it's going to be super heavy and you can't support that. Well, how do you think the tree feels when all the fruit's out there on the very edge? And so you have to leave fruiting wood the length of the branch so that the fruit is evenly distributed along the entire branch.
Next listener has another aeration question. They want to know, is it necessary to have the lawn aerated? And is it a problem getting weeds or diseases from other people's lawns?
It's kind of like sharing toothbrushes with other people sometimes when you pass these aerators mm-hmm. around from lawn to lawn. What you can do is check your soil compaction. If the only time your lawn sees traffic is when you mow it, you can probably get away with aerating every 2 to 3 years. if you have more foot traffic on it, and especially if you have a clay or a loamy soil, I would recommend aerating it annually and leave the plugs on. And then as far as aerators go, there's nothing you can do because they're doing hundreds of lawns. But if you rented one, you may be able to get your hose out and at least wash it off and try to clean the debris out before you use it. But that's about all you can really do.
Next listener would like you to go back to the peach question. They want to know which is better for peaches and apricots, modified central leader or the open vase?
Peaches, always open vase. Apricots, it doesn't matter. They're usually open center, but if you wanted to do modified central leader, that would be fine too.
Because they're smaller and don't weigh as much? Why
just
is that?
Their growth habit is a little more rounded, and you can use either open center or modified central leader pruning with apricots. And the important thing is to get them pruned. And so if they're willing and they know how, then the modified central leader is great, but so is open center.
Okay, we have a couple minutes here to talk about tree planting. When is the best time to plant trees, and what is the best way to make sure that you're going to be successful?
The best time to plant a tree is when you can dig a hole.
Which is now.
Spring and fall, it's a little cooler, it's a little easier on the trees, but you can plant as long as you can dig through the middle of the summer. So just dig your hole, and the main thing you're looking for is the graft union on the trunk of the tree. And as you go toward the base, you will see a knot at the right above what's called the root flare.
Okay.
The root flare is where the roots start, and that's where the trunk starts to expand into the roots. And so that graft union has to be above ground. And so you look for that. And a lot of times trees in the nurseries, especially if they're bigger, are transplanted over and over into new pots, and they will get buried. And so it's not uncommon to find trees that are in the pot already 3 or 4 inches too deep, and you remove the soil until you see the root flare and the graft union.
Okay.
So once you find that root flare and the graft union, you dig the hole to a point where the root flare is even with the ground. And so you want to see the trunk expanding and flaring out, and that goes right above ground. And don't dig the hole any deeper than that because you don't want the soil to settle, but you can dig it wider just so that you can work around the tree a little bit. You want it 6 inches to a foot wider so that you can work the tree and get it settled and positioned how you want and get some soil underneath to get it so that it's straight. And then if the tree is really big, a lot of times nurseries will require staking, especially bald and burlap tree, those are the ones that come in the wire basket for 1 year so that the tree doesn't blow over. And so a lot of times people will use T-posts, or you can get ponderosa stakes that are a couple inches wide and 6 or 8 feet long. And so you can stake them, the larger trees, from one or two sides. And the reason we're staking them is bald and burlap trees will have that wire basket, and it needs to be removed or clipped away.
Okay.
And so you get it in the hole. So you're putting the B&B tree in the hole. And then once it's in there and positioned and you're happy with how it looks, you get some wire cutters and clip the wire off about the top half or top 2/3 of the tree. You can leave the bottom of the basket in and then cut the twine away from the trunk, so that it doesn't girdle the tree as the trunk expands out. And because you've cut that wire basket and the string, that's why we stake bald and burlap trees for a year, so they can get some roots reestablished so that they're more resistant to tipping over in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bald and burlap trees, this might be something that we could do a video on this spring. And
I know someone planting trees. So we can do this. Yeah.
And so if we could convince Michelle to
come
be
out
our
to my house
videographer,
and help me plant trees,
we could plant some trees and just shoot some video of it. So
okay.
That we
wait,
show
that's a great way for me to
properly.
Get some extra help. Thanks, Tom.
So, yeah.
Appreciate that. Well, we're going to take a break. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Spending your Saturday morning with us, Maria and Ton with you this morning. Number to call 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, or you can text us at 57500. Next person would like to know, Ton. He says, or she says, last year you recommended a low shrub. They think it's called the Grow Low Sumac, which, and they want to know if that's invasive, as invasive as the elkhorn.
Well, it not really, but you don't want to overwater them. If you have elkhorn or the staghorn sumac going everywhere, it's being watered too much. And so if you get your lawn irrigation going on staghorn sumac, you plant one and you will have 20 because it's a suckering shrub. And so the Grow Low Sumac is grown as a ground cover or a shrub that will cover 5 or 6 feet wide at least. And so you need to be aware of what it does. Now, Grow Low Sumac can be hedged so that it's about 18 inches tall, and it's actually quite pretty when you do that. But don't overwater it, because the sumacs will survive and be perfectly happy being deep watered every couple of weeks.
Next listener wants to know, do you recommend dethatching a lawn? And if so, should that be done before or after you aerate?
I do not usually recommend dethatching because it's so rough on your lawn. Now, if you have 2 or 3 inches of thatch and you're ready just to start over, it may be worth doing. And at the same time, you would heavily aerate once you've dethatched to try to loosen the soil, because dethatching without loosening the soil will just make it so that the thatch comes back. And the reason you're getting thatch is because water can't penetrate into the soil deeply enough, and the roots are only a few inches deep in the soil. And so you get a buildup of thatch that the lawn actually starts rooting into instead of the soil. And so even if you can pull those plugs out that go 3 inches, that will help. And then I would aerate once or twice a year.
Is there a difference between dethatching and raking? Can you rake off some of that?
You can rake the thatch out. It's still kind of rough on the lawn. It's just that hand raking the thatch out is just more likely to give you a heart attack or an unfortunate cardiovascular event that may require an ambulance.
Okay. Brent is on the line in Draper. Good morning, Brent. What was your question?
Good morning. I have a question about wisteria. We have a wisteria plant that has been in the ground for probably 10 years, and it did well till last year, and it just all the leaves died out, and the trunk seems to also be dead. I'm wondering if I just cut that off at the ground, if there's any chance that I get new growth off of the roots.
Maybe. It just depends on if the disease or whatever's in there made it into the root systems. It sounds like maybe a sudden vascular wilt disease to where it clogged the conductive tissue and the plant collapsed, got it. But you don't know. So all you can do is just cut it back. And if it doesn't send new sprouts up by mid-June, then I don't think it will.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right, Brent, thanks for your call. Next listener wants to know, is there a reason not to just buy seeds from Walmart or any big box store?
Not necessarily. I like to try to support local garden centers and farm stores, because we're losing especially garden centers right and left. And so anything I can do to support them. But Walmart, Home Depot, they have a wide selection of seeds that sometimes you can't find the varieties you need anywhere else. And so I don't have a problem shopping there, but I usually default to the locals first.
Okay, I'm going to live dangerously, try to get Delia in before the top of the hour. Delia, good morning. What was your question this morning?
No, I need to plant some roses, and I've been reading up on roses, and I didn't know whether to buy a bare root or a potted rose.
It doesn't matter. Bare root, you could get in really soon. And what I would recommend doing is just getting it planted and then make sure it doesn't dry out. It'll survive just fine. And the bare roots are oftentimes less expensive, but the potted roses are fine too. And those.
Okay, so either or.
Either
so
or.
Do I start now? Is this a good time to start, or do I wait a while?
If you're, I know that roses have hit the box stores, the bare roots one, and those I would get planted. But the potted roses, if they're established, you're going to have to wait until late April to mid May.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for your call this morning. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.